If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Saturday edition of The Yard, I had originally planned to record yesterday. Games get pushed back. Then I was going to record last night. And I'll be honest with you, I got home, I was a little worried, you know, about this weather. Now, we didn't get nearly what they promised us, and which is a great thing. However, you know, some friends just north of us in Grenada County out in Elliott, Mississippi, are dealing with some pretty unspeakable things today. Our thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's one of those crazy things, too. I mean, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the weatherman's crying wolf. I would rather them cry wolf and us prepare for devastation and get nothing than for us to be unprepared and get devastation. And, you know, I think the people that work in meteorology do, in many respects, kind of a thankless job. But I would rather us always err on the side of caution. And that's one of the things about the decision to go ahead and cancel the game for today. And that's really more about all of you than it is Mississippi State baseball. Because, yeah, I was talking to Aaron Downs last night post-game. And I said, you know, we got fans, man. If we decided to play today, we have some fans out there that love Mississippi State so much that they would say, you know what, hey, it'll be okay. And they could be on the road today and something terrible happened. We don't want that. And if that means us pushing the game back a day to ensure everybody is safe and everybody can get here and get home safely, then that's what we should do. It's not about being soft. It's about being smart. You know, and it's, again, you think about, you know, the competitive advantage of it all, and all that's important, but it's secondary, you know, to the safety of our fans. They would be out there rolling around today and, you know, making some things happen. You know, and as I sit here right now and record this show, there is no rain. And it was the discussion all, you know, really all week that we were going to have rain all day. And supposed to be some light rain coming along here in just a bit. But it has not been what we expected, which is a good thing. It's a very good thing. But again, there are some of our neighbors around the great state of Mississippi that are dealing with some very serious circumstances today. Haven't seen any numbers about casualties, but we hope there's been no loss of life. And, you know, and that's the thing, too, that you think about with all this stuff is, you know, I got a lot of stuff. I know a lot of you have a lot of stuff, too. I got some stuff that's irreplaceable. But I know this. I know that if I lost it all tomorrow and I was still blessed with the gift of life, I could replace all this stuff. And even if I couldn't, I could still find a measure of life and of happiness and, you know, a bit of a modicum of contentment to kind of move forward with life. Because at the end of the day, it is just stuff. But many people out there have lost their stuff today. And they may not be able to replace it with better stuff or stuff they like as much. But that is really a temporary situation. It truly is. And every time we have these situations pop up, you know, it always seems it kind of gives you a different perspective on life. And we do expect some heavier rain at some point today, but the reality of it is that is something that is just, you know, a detail in the human experience. You know, the rain falls on the head of the just and the unjust alike, as my dad used to always say. He'd reference a good book. You know, there'd be times I'd be a little bit feeling sorry for myself. So, you know, Dad, why do these things happen to me? He said, well, you know, the good book says that the rain falls on the heads of the just and the unjust alike. And there is truth in that. Probably not too many statements that have ever been uttered or written or inspired at any point in human existence than those. We're all dealing with the same circumstances. It's kind of how we respond to them that kind of define us as people. But supposed to be a rainy afternoon and evening. Looks like the rain should stop right around sunset in Starkville. But could be some thunderstorms and perhaps some tornadic activity throughout the state in the afternoon. And so I thought, hey, with no sporting events today, it's not going to kill me to get a good night's rest and then get up and record the show feeling fresh and kind of have an idea of kind of what we're looking at. But no Mississippi State sporting events today, which is a rarity on a Saturday, you know, this time of year. Spring football practice starts next week. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. We'll recap the baseball game, take a final look back at Missouri and State's run in the SEC tournament, and we'll look ahead to some NCAA projections. We find out on Sunday about the selection process. Of course, we'll be covering, baseball. Dave Murray is going to go over and handle our coverage of selection Sunday. There will be kind of a team watch party. It is not open to the public, so we're not going to put that information out there because we don't, you know, as well-intended as people may be, this is about them. But media will have a chance to be there, and so Dave will be there, and they'll probably be, you know, yeah, there's going to be a little media availability afterwards. I'm sure Chris Jans will say a few things along with some of the notable players, and it's going to be our last chance to get some comments from our players before they head on to the regional site. And, once they get there, then, of course, typical NCAA media protocol, is followed. And so, but the reality of it is that, yeah, there's some good things to feel good about. Of course, the ladies on Monday will find out their postseason destination and opponents. I can tell you there is a lot of enthusiasm, but also, too, optimism about both of our men's and women's basketball teams making the tournament, and that's mean making the 64. I don't know if the women are in the play-in game or not. I think we're probably better off than that. But, I go back sometimes, too. I feel like I live in an alternate reality because I read and see these people say, there's just nothing to feel good about. Guys, we're about to have a men's and women's basketball teams in the NCAA tournament for, the sixth time in school history? It's a rarity. So, yeah, there's some things to feel good about. We didn't expect baseball to go undefeated, but we've lost way too many one-run games, and you need some guys to kind of step up. But, there's a lot of things to feel good about. I mean, truthfully, maybe not as great as we'd like to feel. You know, we'd like to be heading into the NCAA tournament, with full head of steam on both sides, feeling like we're playing our best basketball, and I don't know if we're doing that, right? I mean, just say it for what it is. You want to be playing your best basketball in March, and we're not, okay? That's not to say that with a new season, a new tournament, that we couldn't, replicate some of our earlier season success, because at the end of the day, seasons are defined on how you do in the postseason. Right? Especially when it comes to these tournaments, right? It's not like the bowl season where it's like, well, you find out you're not in the playoffs, you're going to, a bowl game. Everybody involved in these tournaments still has a chance to win a national championship. It may not be a realistic chance, but you have an opportunity to continue to play and win something significant, to have banner-hanging seasons and hey, we took a big step forward this year. Because, again, men's and women's basketball teams and college baseball teams, those seasons are defined on what you do in the tournament. And now here we are, still active participants in all of that. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, we love Bulldog Burger Company. I plan to have some. We'll do it today. Maybe we'll do it today. We'll see how things go. But if not today, early next week. I love being back home and having the opportunity to eat at my favorite local restaurants. My favorite one is Bulldog Burger Company because they can cure what ails you, right? I don't just eat for nourishment. I eat for enjoyment, which is one of the reasons I am such a frequent diner with Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harper Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. One of the things, too, I encourage you to is ask about the specials. You typically don't have to ask because you get such quality service there. But there's always something new and fresh to try. And you never know. When those things are popular, they could end up on the full-time menu. So you can have a say in some of that. But part of the Eat With Us group, a great group of restaurateurs that have done such an amazing job feeding, nourishing, and entertaining us, you know, for years. We're so fortunate to have this group here in town. And I encourage you, as always, go find your own favorites. If you're a newbie to Bulldog Burger Company, and chances are you're not, but if you're a newbie, get the Bulldog. That is a good way to kind of get going. It's a great way to start. Your gateway burger at Bulldog Burger Company is usually the Bulldog. Great, straight-ahead, rock and roll American cheeseburger, and you can get it dressed how you like. True. All right, let's quickly go back and recap our baseball game last night. And, man, for a while there, it felt like, hey, we're going to cruise right on into SEC win number one. It's a good Texas team, too. And I'll be honest with you, the quality of their non-conference schedule, not great. Not great at all. But, yeah, watching these guys play, they don't give you a lot defensively. You know, they've got size and length out there. They can cover the infield pretty well. So they're not going to give you a lot of extra opportunities. You got to earn everything you get against this team. Pico came out. I thought Pico was really good. He goes 1-2-3 there in the first. We come back, and we go 1-2-3-2. And we felt like this was going to be a game two because of the quality of starting pitching, that offense would come at a premium. Little did we know it'd be an 8-7 ball game. You expect tight ball games on Friday in the SEC. We weren't expecting 8-7. However, with the wind blowing out to left center, with sustained winds of around 17 to 18 and gusts up to 30, we knew there'd be a few balls to get out of there, and there were. But I thought both pitchers did a good job, and State had a good plan. And I was curious, too, because they were throwing the left-hander. You know, I do these pitching previews. Got some friends that provide me with some great information. We're able to kind of put an article together to prepare you about what to expect from the starters each day. And that's the thing with this one. You know, we knew with Spencer coming in that he was legit. However, we had a good plan. And I thought, you know what, hey, with a left-hander, we'll stack right-handers. However, after getting the analytics, you see he doesn't have that big sweeping slider. And so we actually put some left-handers in there, and we had some really good at-bats and had some production. We didn't here in this first inning as we go 1-2-3. We get into the second. And again, we talk about this stuff all the time. You have to be able to make guys earn their way on. Pico's been really, really stingy this year. But we lose a full count, and we end up walking Rodriguez. And they call him A-Rod. I don't know how I feel about that. It's Adrian Rodriguez, and so I guess technically that's correct. But I don't know, you know. It'd be like me calling myself Alice Cooper or something. You know, it's just, yeah. Mm. But we bounce back, and we get a strikeout and a pop-up to third, and it feels like, okay, we're going to navigate our way through this this leadoff walk. But instead, we get ahead 1-2 and catch too much at the plate and give Galvan some credit. He gets the ball up there in a jet stream, and he gets out. But the ball was hit really well. So it's a 2-0 ball game after that two-run shot. But again, you go back and think about it. You guys, you're one pitch away from 1-2-3 inning. But that's what happens in baseball, right? All of this stuff matters. It does. We get Borber to strike out looking. So we're down 2-0, and we needed to answer. And I felt like Noah Sullivan's solo home run to open the second was good, not just because of the fact that it, you know, pulled us within a run, but I think, you know, hey, they go out there and get a shot against our best guy. We got to go get one against them. And those are the things that I think are very demoralizing to teams. And again, I think we had a great plan against Spencer, and we ended up chasing him. But I thought this was a very positive development here because their dude goes up there and cruises too, and then you respond, and Noah Sullivan, you know, the preseason All-American, with a 1-0 single solo shot. Kind of tripped over my words there. But a solo home run to make it 2-1. And it really brought some life to the stadium. And then Hunter Hines, great job of hitting here. And some, guys, I love you all to death, but sometimes I think we watch different games. Like I've seen people say, well, Hunter Hines just Deadpool hitter. He's all he never changes. And it's not true. It's just simply not true. The spray chart does not support your tired narrative about Hunter Hines. Hunter Hines has taken tremendous steps this year to try to work back up the middle and to not try to pull everything. We've seen it. And if you're not seeing it, you just don't want to see it. So here we are, 0-2 count, and he gets a slider, and rather than roll it over to second, rather than pop it up, what does he do? He singles it back up the middle, and if you go back and look at the highlights there, you can tell he adjusts the swing and goes with the pitch and takes it back up the middle. Aaron Downs strikes out swinging, and then Gad Sanders, our fourth starting second baseman this year, looks to be our best, at least for this year. Gat takes it the other way. Hines takes second. And then Ross Highfield, the much maligned Ross Highfield, a guy that I am still very much a fan of, comes up there, hits an oppo taco, gets the slider, and takes it where it's pitched. We talk a little bit about point of contact. And if you guys know much about baseball, if you ever coached hitting, if you ever watched somebody coach your kid in hitting, point of contact is very important. And so we're not going to get too technical with that, but Ross gets the pitch and he's expecting it on the outer half rather than pull that ball and try to push it back up the middle, because you're not going to yank that ball to left field. You're not going to do it. You get a left-handed pitcher that throws with some velo, and you got a right-hand guy with some real strength, but he doesn't have enough strength to yank that ball out of the yard to left field. Instead, Ross goes with the pitch, and it is a three-run home run, our fourth hit in the inning, our fourth run to touch home, makes it a 4-2 ball game. Cup strikes out looking, but a quality at bat there, and then Stallman grounds out the first. We've kind of experimented with the Stallman thing leading off. I just don't think it's working. And the numbers kind of tell all of us it's not working. I think Reed needs to be deeper in the order. We kind of, you know, again, sometimes you can tinker with the lineup a little bit too much. We don't really have a true leadoff guy. But anyway, I'm not going to beat up Reed Stallman, even though he had a tough night. But anyway, you put four in the inning. Coming into this ball game, Jared Spencer had allowed 13 hits and 2 runs. Mississippi State scores 4 in the first 2 innings of action. Pico responds and does what great pitchers do. Once you get even or get an advantage, you put up a crooked number, you need a 1-2-3 inning, he gets it. 1-2-3 inning, bottom of third, State right back on the sticks. We get a ground out, and then Noah Sullivan doubles inside the bag at third, and Hines pops up to the catcher. And, you know, again, you got a runner in scoring position here with 2 outs. You'd like the clutch hit there, but I'm not going to beat up Hunter Hines in that situation. Again, this guy's throwing some filth. Top of 4. Pico again, 1-2-3 in, and even gets a couple punch outs there. All right, bottom of 4. And, again, a chance for us to do a little something here. We get the opening walk to Downs against a guy that doesn't walk a whole lot, you know. And so you got a leadoff guy on, and Gad can't get the bunt down. We end up striking out here. You want to be able to move that runner around because you know every run on a Friday night in the SEC is huge. Huge. Highfield then strikes out swinging, Cup grounds out to second. So we don't do anything with that leadoff walk. Leadoff walks, as you guys know, are of the devil. When you're pitching, they're of God when you're on offense, but you have to take advantage of the blessings that are afforded you. Again, Pico, 1-2-3, and you look at this and you feel like, you know, hey man, Pico has kind of got these guys figured out, and there were so many people all throughout preseason. I just don't see it with Pico. I don't see it with. Do you see it now? You know, Pico is a dude, an absolute dude, and so 1-2-3 inning. Bottom of 5, we go 1-2-3. our top of six. It's a line out to center. And then we have a ball that we misplay. Downs misplays this thing in right. And to be fair to him, you know, the sun's in his eyes. The sun hadn't been out for a while, but it came back in the middle innings. You got to play this ball on the hop. We don't. It ends up being a triple. And he scores. We tried to run a pickoff play, and it was a called play. It wasn't just Ross just on his own thinking, hey, I'll go get this guy. If you notice on the play, immediately Reese is trying to sneak in behind there, and we end up throwing it away. I think there was just a little too much traffic at the bag. Ross gets charged with the error. The run scores, and, of course, the very next pitch is a ground out to first. The runner would have scored anyway. I think some people feel like that, you know, had we not thrown that ball down there, the run would have just disappeared. No. The run scored anyway. Not excusing the error, but it's not. That's not why we lost. If you want to talk about this sequence, it's really misplaying the ball in right. And again, I'm not going to beat up Aaron Downs for trying to make a play for the Diamond Dogs. But if you take that ball off the bounce, Mendoza is at first. Could have changed the sequence of everything. Nevertheless, we get a Flores to fly out, and so we escape there with the one-run lead. And what's interesting, like before that triple, we talk about how Pico was just simply just kind of rolling through this thing. Guys, he had gone through a stretch there. What is it? Retired maybe 11 in a row? So you give up the home run to Galvin? Yeah. So you get the strikeout looking. You come back and get a 1-2-3 inning. That's four, right? Another 1-2-3 inning makes it seven. Another 1-2-3 inning makes it 10. And then you get the line out to center. So, yeah, he had sat down 11 in a row after the home run until Mendoza's triple. That's big-time SEC pitching. Now, again, they score, so we need to answer. And in the bottom of six, we do. Noah Sullivan collects his third hit of the ball game. Heinzen fouls out to the second baseman just along the right field line. Downs pops up to short. Gadd comes up again. Singles back up the middle here. And so a two-out hit there extends the inning. They go out and they have the visit. And then it's Ross Highfield. Comes up and hammers the ball to right field. I mean, really hit that baseball well. It's a sinking line drive. Run scores. And so Highfield with four RBI of our five runs. And again, two-out magic, right? Those are the kinds of things that matter. That's winning baseball. Well, that chases Spencer, and they bring in the Plantier. And he immediately walks Dylan Cup. So now the bases are loaded. And right here, when this happened, you're happy with the one run, but you and I both know you can never have enough runs in an SEC ballgame. Really in any ballgame, but certainly in an SEC ballgame. Despite the fact that Pico had been pitching well, you needed a big hit here. You hate to leave them loaded. And I've seen some people, we left six on base. Okay, it's not like, you know, that we just couldn't make the big hit all day long. But here's a scenario where we didn't come through. And Stallman strikes out swinging on a 1-2 pitch, but again, you got the run back, right? So it's a 5-3 ball game. We get into the seventh. We bring Pico back out, and a lot of people are critical with the gift of hindsight, right? Guys, Pico had been dealing at this point. Pitch count wasn't up. His velo was not down, maybe a tick or two on the fastball. There were no signs at this point that he was fading, none. And he would tell you the same thing. Absolutely would. But we get into a 1-2 count. We end up, he fouls the back, and then we hit him. But you get ahead 1-2, and you end up hitting the guy. Just had the breaker get away from him. And then Schuessler singles to center. So we go get him. And here's the thing that I would say. If it had been Coach Robertson making the call here, I'm not going to second guess Justin Parker, but I would have went and got Pico after Rodriguez. Not because of any problems with Pico, but if your guy is already ready, you already got your guy hiding the bullpen, let's give him a little more of a fighting chance here, right? Relievers understand they're going to have to come in and be firemen, but the fact that we put Hungate in the ballgame and the tying runs are already on base – And again, we're always blessed with the gift of hindsight. I just think I would have got Pico after the first one. And I hate the Monday morning quarterback that. But again, Pico had been rolling, and just one pitch gets away from him. But, yeah, I like relievers to have a clean inning when we can provide that for them as best we can. So we bring in Chase Hungate, who has been absolute nails for us. And I have seen some people out there say, why do we get Hungate? Well, I'm so glad that you asked. Because in his previous seven outings, he had not allowed a run. If you've watched Mississippi State baseball at all this year, you felt comfortable with Chase Hungate running onto the field. He is an arm slot guy that works down and gets a lot of ground balls. You needed to get a ground ball, maybe a double play to get out of this thing. It didn't work, though. You had a couple balls right back up the middle, and it's a tie ball game. And then Borba hits a three-run shot, makes it an 8-5 ball game. And then this is what happens in SEC baseball. You have the one come apart inning late, it's difficult to recover. But no, there's not one ounce of my being that thinks, hey, this was the wrong move. We absolutely made the right move, it just didn't work out. And I've seen people like, well, we just made a bad pitching decision. Not bringing Chase Hungate in would have been the bad pitching decision. The body of work throughout his college career and his time in Maroon and White suggests he was absolutely the right call. It simply didn't work out. Sometimes you call the right play in football. Sometimes you call the right play in basketball and a guy misses a shot. And sometimes a guy just doesn't have it. And that appears to be the case for Chase. But no, there's no evidence whatsoever to support any of this hysterical commentary about, oh, what a blunder. Are you kidding me? What you're really saying, and you're really confessing to the world, is that I don't know baseball. That's what you're really saying. You're saying, hey, I haven't paid attention this year, but since we lost and since this guy didn't have a good outing, I'm going to blame him and blame our staff. Because really, the failure in this to understand is mine, Mr. Joe Q. Casual Bulldog fan. But anyway, we suck with him after the home run, and we get a ground out, and then Mendoza singles back up the middle, and we go get Dotson. And that's the thing. Why don't we spring in Dotson? What, just a couple weeks ago, you didn't want Dotson playing, right? It's easy to say that in hindsight that, well, we should have gone to Dotson. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Nevertheless, Dotson comes in, and we get a pickoff there, and we get a strikeout swinging. So we're out of that thing pretty quickly. But again, we're trailing by three. And you kept thinking, okay, we got top of the order here in the seventh. We need to find a way to kind of chip away. And we go 1-2-3. All right, top of eight, Dotson's still back out there. We get the strikeout looking, fly out to center, allow a two-out single, and then get Gasparino to strike out looking. So again, good outing for Dotson. Bottom of eight, and again, you got to find a way to score. You know, you don't want this thing to go to the ninth inning. Hines pops up to short center. We pinch hit for Downs with no one Stevens. He flies out to left. And then Sanders strikes out looking. So, you know, that's 5-6-7 not coming through for you. Top of nine, you bring in Stone Simmons, who was really good. He gives a foul out. They call it a single, but guy, it was a two-hopper to third. And basically, Ace is just kind of patting his glove and chopping woods and just didn't let it go quick enough. And originally scored in the E5, they go back and change it to a single. I disagree with the scoring, but nevertheless, he's a base runner either way. But, Stone gets a pair of strikeouts to get out of it. Lengthy battle there with Mendoza. You know, he fouls back the breaker on full count, and then we come right back with it and get him swinging. Or 2-2 count, pardon me. All right, bottom of nine, we're hoping for some Maroon magic here, and you're thinking, guys, I just need base runners. Well, Ross Highfield lines out, and we pinch hit with Garrick Frey. We talk about, hey, we're not pushing the right buttons. We push the right button here. We bring in Garrick Frey. We pinch hit for Dylan Cup. Frey gets a walk. Stallman then strikes out swinging on a full count, and a pretty filthy slider there. Frey goes to second on the wild pitch, and then they walk Chance. They bring in Volantis, who was rumored to be starting on Sunday. And that says a lot about Texas' commitment to win the game last night and also probably some worry about the weather. You know, is there going to be two games on Sunday? Well, there will be. But at the time, you don't know that, right? So maybe that works out for us in the end. Ace Reese comes up, gets down 0-2 in the count, and then lifts one to left center. And had the wind been blowing as high as it was earlier in the ballgame, this thing sails easily into the lounge. Instead, it's off the wall there. It's a double two-run score. And now you've got the tying run at second, the winning run at home. And is there anybody in maroon and white you would rather be have at the plate at this point other than Noah Sullivan? The answer to that question, I think, is no. Not to mention you had a great night last night. And 0-1 count, and then we end up hard grounder to second, or to short. And if that's, a couple feet either way, Reese is probably going to score here. But that's what happens. But, you know, anytime that there's a one-run ball game, but all, you know, it never boils down to just that last thing. But there's so many things I go back to. Misplaying the ball in right was one of them. And, of course, leaving the bases loaded as the heavy rains appear to have come in Starkville here. But look at the box score. Let's see real quickly here. Yeah. 1-2 in this ballgame. Stallman and Chance go 0-9. Of course, Bryce did have the big walk there in the ninth to kind of keep matters alive. Ace Reese had a tough night, too. He was 0-4 before that ninth inning hit. And so, again, you know, if we're going to go 1-14, top third of the order, it's going to be tough, right? Noah Sullivan, 3-5 in the ballgame. Hunter Hines, 1-4. Aaron Downs goes 0-2. We do pinch hit for him, and Stevens goes 0-1. Gad Sanders, 2-4. Ross Highfield, 2-4, of course, 4 RBIs. And it's good to see Ross kind of get going a little bit. We need him, right? Pico goes 6 innings, allows 3 hits, charged with 5 runs, 4 of them earned, 6 strikeouts, the 1 walk, and the hit by pitch. And, of course, again, you know, there are a lot of people that believe, hey, you should give those guys a chance to work as deep as they can. There are other people that believe you need to give the relievers a clean inning. And I'm kind of in between. I think it's situational. I don't think there can be a hard, fast rule. But I think after he plunked the guy, I would have went and got him, especially when I got Hungate ready. Even though Chase didn't have a good outing, he lost 4 hits and 3 runs, only gets 1 out, faced 5 hitters. Luke Dodson goes 1-2/3, allows 1 hit, 3 punch outs, no walks. Stone Simmons, of course, the 1 hit there. So Bulldog pitching 11 strikeouts against just 1 walk. And then the hit by pitch. And that's the thing, too. You look at this stuff, you know, the walk and the hit by pitch both end up scoring. And you can't be perfect, but the reality of it is we were pretty close. And it ends up being the difference in the ballgame. It ends up being, you know, one play, but it could be any number of plays that make the difference, you know. And that's SEC baseball. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. Hungate charged with the loss. Andre DePlanter gets the win in relief. But Dylan Volantis gets the save there. And so no baseball today as Texas advances to 15-1, 1-0 in the SEC. Bulldogs drop a 13-5, 0-1. My feelings about this team have not changed, but we need to find a little clutch in us. We had some of those issues last year, and it's so interesting, too. You look at the numbers. The line score for Texas, 8 runs on 9 hits. For State, it's 7 runs on 9 hits. And that's going to be on Fridays. You know, it's going to boil down to who can get the big hits. And this was a game of big hits, and we had some big hits, but we came up a big hit short. And that ultimately decided the ball game. So, again, no ball games today. Doubleheader on Sunday beginning at 1 o'clock. And they said, but Steve, why? It's TV. Okay, that is a hard, fast start time. We'll be 2-7s on Sunday. And so you need to be prepared for that. And, again, be safe out there today, kids, for sure, just because of the fact that you never know when something else could pop off. But, yeah, we got to start winning these games. And, again, every game that we've lost this year, every single game, all 5 losses, we have had the tying and or winning run on base in the ninth inning. And it's so easy for me to say this. Tanner Allen would have got the hit, right? True. Reese gets the big hit there, but Tanner Allen would have got the hit. Tanner Allen's a tough dude. You know, you wanted him up there. And so we've got to find a way to make those plays because it seems like once you break the ceiling, all of a sudden other people begin to believe it. But, you know, when Reese hits the double to left, I mean, you're hoping that thing gets out of there. Because you did. I just felt like, hey, if we win this game, if we tie it, I think we're going to win it. And then you eat up some other arms for them, and it probably sets you up well to win the series too. You still may win a series, but I think an extra inning affair probably hurts Texas more than it hurts Mississippi State. That's how I see it. And quickly, let's just kind of look back at the scores last night from the Friday night scores. We'll watch some college baseball in this house today. I don't know what you'll do in yours, but probably watch a little basketball too. We'll flip back and forth. But looking at last night's scores, and I guess we can kind of look at what's happened today too. But last night's scores in the Southeastern Conference, Ole Miss wins at home against Arkansas, who I think Arkansas is a bit overrated. And you know what? Maybe we've misjudged this Ole Miss team. They jump all over Arkansas early and win the game 10-6. 24 hits combined in the ballgame. Yeah, maybe not as pitching strong as some people may think at times. But, yeah, so big game one win for Ole Miss. And again, I just think Arkansas, I just don't think there's enough stars in that lineup. Just my feeling. Missouri gave LSU a game for a while. It was 2-2 into the fourth, and LSU puts up five there in the fourth. And from there, kind of cruised to a 12-5 win. Kentucky and Georgia. Georgia takes their 12-6 game. 10 hits for Georgia, 5 for Kentucky. And if you're Kentucky, you got to get the ball in the air when you're playing at Foley Field. Tennessee, big win. Top 10 matchup between Tennessee and Florida. Tennessee wins game 1-5-3. Alabama goes to A&M, wins game 1. Anytime that you can win a road series, it's huge in this league. But I think this vulnerable Texas A&M team, I don't know that it's the win that you know, it's a win, and all of them count the same. It's not the loud win some people have suggested. A&M now 10-7. 10-7 on the year, and supposedly have this dream team. Again, they've had some injuries, but it is what it is. Oklahoma, 8-5 winners in Columbia over South Carolina. Of course, Oklahoma, Mississippi State's opponent next weekend out in Norman. Looking forward to that. Vanderbilt, of course, loses to Auburn. I've told you guys, beginning of this year, Vanderbilt is NFR, not for real. And I thought that Auburn could be a team that would surprise a little bit. I believe they have. And they pick up win number 1 of the SEC against Vanderbilt. My honest opinion is I don't think Vanderbilt's a top 25 team. And I think these next couple weeks will prove that. Looking ahead to today, and of course we're wrapping this show up probably around 12:30 or so. Auburn is already off to a 3-0 lead over Vanderbilt. Looking to take the series today. I expect them to take the series today. And, of course, all other action going to take place later in the day. And there are a lot of doubleheaders out there scheduled for tomorrow. We're not alone. But Kentucky and Georgia will get game 2 underway this afternoon. Alabama, A&M, and Florida, Tennessee, Oklahoma, South Carolina. Arkansas and Ole Miss will play tonight. Missouri and LSU tonight as well. So we'll take this time now to announce our player of the game. And obviously, even though that last at-bat didn't go the way he wanted it to go, I think it has to be Noah Sullivan for our player of the game. Brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair, of course, our friend in the mortgage industry. If you are looking for a home or looking to do some work with your home, whether it be getting some equity out to do some home improvements, or to pay off some bills, Blair's the way to go. Reach out to Blair. Get his 24 years of experience working for you. 601-500-2344. Again, that's 601-500-2344. Blair is a guy that knows sports. He's a guy that knows Mississippi State. He knows the mortgage industry. It's very important to get a seasoned professional working for you. This is an adult decision, right? And so the reality of that is you need to make sure that you entrust that business in the hands of someone who will do a great job for you. He can structure your loan to give you the best chance of approval. I think that's exceptionally important too. There's just so much of that that I don't think people fully understand, that it's not sometimes what you buy, but who helps you buy that puts you in a good deal. That's an extremely important aspect of this. And Blair can be your advocate with underwriting. And I think each one of you understands kind of what's at stake. Again, that's closedatblair.com. Visit him today. Several Boneyard listeners have closed loans through closedatblair.com. All right, time for today's top 10 list, brought to you by Kalito Guitars. Kalito Guitars, a Mississippi state-owned and operated business out of Lake Jackson, Texas. It doesn't matter if you're a new player or a professional player. No matter what your needs are, they can fill them. They sell electric, acoustic, and classical guitars. They're known for high-quality instruments, exemplary customer service, and their expert advice. They're there to help you meet all of your needs. It's a complete setup and inspection type deal, too. It's not like, hey, they just, go grab a guitar out of the warehouse and slap a sticker on it. They check it out to make sure it's exactly what you want. They'll set it up the way you need it. Guitars, again, for beginners and professionals. Not just guitars. You can get strings, cases, gig bags, pretty much whatever you need. Visit Kalito Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O Guitars, C-A-L-I-D-O Guitars.com, or call 979-297-4733. And to give you some incentive to give your business to them, you get a 10% discount by using promo code BSR, right? Whether it be online or through the telephone, tell them that you heard about them on the show. You get a 10% discount. You also will get free shipping and no sales tax unless you live in Texas. In addition, 5% of your purchase is donated to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund. So not only are you helping your player or yourself, you're helping Mississippi State by keeping business in the family. We encourage you to do that at all times. Again, Kalito Guitars, the proud sponsor of today's top 10 list. We're going to talk about some guitar stuff today, too. And I told my wife what I was working on today, and she said, why? And I said, well, it's because it gives me a chance to talk about some great musicians that didn't always break in America, but also, too, I just dig some of these bands. We're doing the Rock of Norway today. Now, the first thing that I want to tell you, I don't know what's happened in Norway. I don't know what's going on there. There's a lot of death metal in Norway, and I believe them, right? Like when Guns N' Roses hit the scene, right? You're like, you know what? They're singing about their lives. There's something to this. There is some authenticity with this band. When they say they've been dancing with Mr. Brownstone, I believe them. When I see this stuff, this death metal stuff, and it's not really my thing, to be honest with you, it kind of scares me a little bit, to be honest with you, because I believe them. I think these people really are, demonic and unholy, and I believe it. I do. I don't think it's an act. I think these people are very disturbed. So there is a huge death metal movement in Norway. We're not going to do a ton of that on our list today, but I wanted to acknowledge that I believe there is some authenticity with what they're saying. I believe that these people believe these things that they're professing in their music. So we're going to be a little lighter than that. There's some names that may frighten you a little bit, but there's no reason to, right? So we're going to start with an interesting band called Trucks. They only had one album, but they had one song, and this is a PG-13 show, so I elected not to go with it. They kind of had a novelty song, about all of the women that wear risque clothing and advertising and things like that, right? There's just, you'll find it if you look for it. But I went with a track called Kickin' from the band Trucks. Their album Juice, actually super cool, but they didn't stick around for very long. But I think that you will enjoy that. I think it's something that is a little, it's very Americanized in some respects. They kind of sound a little bit like the band Dead Eye Dick, for those of you that remember that in the 90s. Okay, number 9, a band called Stone Guard, and that's with no U. You'll have to provide your own U. These guys, a heavier band, not a death metal band. They do have a little bit of a melodic influence in all this. It's more like an 80s, 90s, heavier band. I mean, it's not Poison with an accent. They've got a little more kick than that. But I went with a track called The Last Good Page. I think you'll dig these guys. He's a little different. Now, one of the most successful bands to come out of Norway is a band called Satyricon. Now, they have done some death metal stuff and then kind of moved away from that. I found a song that I think is kind of in between, like during that evolution as a band. It's a track called Black Crow on a Tombstone. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Some of this death metal stuff kind of comes off as tortured puns. Like they just kind of throw stuff out there because there are just so many people that are kind of disillusioned with life. And I think they found something that they can kind of latch on to. This one, I think, is of better quality. And Satyricon has had a long-running band and have had some success internationally. They're not just limited to Norway. Now, number seven on our list, I really like these guys. And for those of you that go back and you're Nine Inch Nails fans, you like the industrial stuff, Ministry, like I do. If I ever do an album again, that's probably the way that we'll go. But nevertheless, I like Zeromancer. I like these guys. They actually did a great rendition of Send Me an Angel. You guys know that track. Scorpions actually covered it too. But they have a song that is actually interesting in kind of a novelty aspect of it, but it's also a little disturbing, you know. And it's basically about, you know, people that want to, you know, unalive themselves, as we say these days. I guess that's just more palatable. But it's a track called Doctor Online. It's an interesting song. The guitar is really cool on it. But again, that's Zeromancer, Doctor Online. And I guess it's very industrial. Now, as things kind of move forward with them, they kind of get a little bit away from that Nine Inch Nails sound. But they're clearly influenced by Trent Reznor. All right, number six, Sigmund. Now, these guys, too, had some success actually on early 90s alternative radio. They didn't really break in the United States, but they did have a little bit of success. They've had some huge international success kind of in their neighboring countries. But it's a track called The Modern End. That's what we're going with number six, Sigmund, The Modern End. Now, number five, an interesting name, and I really like these guys. The name itself is kind of playful, but it also, too, kind of pokes fun. And the band itself has a lot of those tracks that kind of poke fun, you know, that people are so serious about certain things. But it's a band called Glucifer. Yeah, Glucifer. That's correct. The track is called Bounce Checks. I dig it. I think it's super funny. But it's also, too, the lyrical content's good. But the music itself, the composition of songs, super cool. Now, the top four, chances are you've heard of these bands. You may not have heard of any of our first eight, but I think you've heard of the rest. Now, one of the bands that really did have some success in America is a band called Turbo Negro. And some of you right now are thinking, Steve, I've forgotten about that band. Now, others of you have heard this band and maybe didn't know that you were listening to Turbo Negro. But they were on the Jackass soundtrack with a song called All My Friends Are Dead. And that's your number four track, All My Friends Are Dead. And they're very much a punk band, but they're not a sloppy punk band. Like they have some punk influence. You can tell it's a little bit irreverent, but it's a little more polished than some of the... Some people just can't play and they call it punk. And some people are scared to say that, but that's the reality of it. These guys can actually play. And I think that you can have some fun with Turbo Negro. They've had a lot of songs that, again, that they have a sense of humor. They do. They take some shots at some historical figures and kind of suggest that they were mentally impaired. All right, number three. And I guarantee you, you probably have heard at least one track if you're of my generation and you're part of the MTV generation. You've heard this band. You know, they used to have the, you know, Dial MTV or whatever. Remember that? You know, when MTV played music? Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. I don't know. But it was a band called the Stage Dolls. And they've still done some interesting things, you know. But they had a huge hit that was on MTV and probably their biggest hit in the United States. But they're still active, believe it or not. They've been active since 1983. How about that? And looking at some of the pictures, it appears that they're not playing arenas anymore. But their third album was self-titled. They had a couple of songs that were very popular. And they made the Billboard charts with Love Cries. I think you'll dig that one. It's one of these, again, one of these bands that had a kind of an Americanized sound. And what's interesting to me, too, is that the main trio in this band that started the band in 83 are still together. They've had a couple different drummers. But by and large, this band is, you know, still the Stage Dolls. I guess two of the members are still original members. The drummer joined in 93 and still with them. So, I mean, you know, it's not like it's, you know, revolving door. But, again, they had a couple of albums in Europe that had some success. And then the self-titled album, once they signed with, you know, Chrysalis Records for America, they broke. And, again, that song was very, very popular. And that album did well in the United States. Number two, and if I had to pick, this would be my favorite band from Norway, but I could not ignore who was number one because of their international success. And so there is probably this band out there that you don't know really well. Maybe you've heard of them, maybe you haven't, but you owe it to yourself. If you like the 80s sound, you need to give TNT a listen. I love these guys. I do. And I think Tony Harnell is one of the best singers. He actually spent some time, maybe like 6 weeks, as a singer of Skid Row. Yeah, how about that? Super cool, right? But what's interesting is Tony is originally from San Diego, California, but moved and ended up, you know, joining up with these guys. It's interesting, you know. Tony left them in the mid-80s, left the Jackals to join TNT. Pretty interesting, you know. But phenomenal singer. And guitarist Ronnie Leticro is a guy that is maybe the best guitarist name you don't know. Absolutely love these guys, man, and I have for a long time. And, so when Johnny Solinger left Skid Row and sadly died, Tony Harnell was named as the replacement. And, he was with them for several months, but didn't stick around. But it's all good. And, Tony's had some solo releases and things like that. But we're going to go back to not really the beginning. I love the Knights of the New Thunder album. It didn't have a ton of production value to it. It's like they didn't put a ton of money in it. And then things kind of got rolling after that. You know, it's all very interesting to me. But the debut album was TNT, but Knights of the New Thunder was great. But Tell No Tales was released in 1987. And we're going to go with the song 10,000 Lovers in One. And it is very 80s. Very, very 80s. But then the album Intuition came out. And I think, number one, they took maybe the best of a TNT goodness. But they weren't really trying to mimic the 80s American rock scene. And I think it's maybe more true to who they are. The Intuition album is my favorite, even though Tell No Tales was my gateway album. Went back and bought Knights of the New Thunder, a great, great ballad on that album called Lost Without Your Love. And I think that's one of those things with Tony. He has kind of that breathy American sound because he's Native of America, but pretty incredible band. And you know, still recording, still putting things out. What is it here, a dozen, 13 albums? You know, impressive band. And again, I think of the bands on here that maybe you're unfamiliar with, this may be one of those bands you look at and say, you know what, how did I miss these guys? But number one, not really a rock band. But it would be impossible to talk about the music of Norway without mentioning a-ha. That's right. That's right. And a lot of you thought, oh, well, younger generation thinks, well, a-ha is an American band. No, they just have an American sound. And really had some big hits. The album Hunting High and Low was great. Went to number one in Norway. Went to number two in the UK. They had an international number one single with Take On Me, which is your number one song today. But what's interesting about this song is because of the revolutionary video editing that made that video such an incredible hit on MTV. They rode the wave of MTV, and they were perfect for MTV because of the fact that they just simply had the American pop sound and made it work for themselves. I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is. And a lot of people say, well, yeah, they were kind of a one-hit wonder. And I don't know that that's fair. Maybe I see it a little differently than you guys do. But that was the thing in the United States back then. If you had the one big hit, typically you come back with another one. And they end up being nominated and become the first Norwegian band ever to be nominated for a Grammy. But believe it or not, Take On Me was not the first single on the album. Love Is a Reason was. And then Hunting High and Low had some success as well. But a-ha still releasing music, released a new album called True North back in 2022. And it's never, ever sustained the same level of success. But let's be honest about it, For about a year there, everybody knew kind of what was going on with these guys. And you loved the pencil drawings in the video. And if you're unfamiliar with the video, you owe it to yourself. And you look at it nowadays and say, well, with the technology today. But guys, back in 85, we had never seen anything like this at any point. We're like, how does this happen? Oh, the guy's in a picture? How does he become a pencil drawing and then he's on stage? It just didn't make any sense to us. It blew our minds. So there you go. Technically a one-hit wonder. Maybe that's not a fair characterization, but it is obviously the biggest selling single of all time from a band from Norway. And it's so interesting that they're known for that, but then now they've got this huge death metal scene. It's just so weird to me. It's so weird to me. It makes me not want to visit Norway. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what? I got to walk around here and go eat. And these people maybe want to kill me. It's nuts. I believe it. I do. I believe a lot of things and maybe you don't. But I believe these death metal people from Norway would hurt us if given the opportunity. It's true. But I hope you enjoyed our top 10 list today. If you have an idea for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on X at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under the same handle. And there are times that Roy gets a little bit behind, but he'll get caught up and kind of batch him up, and we'll push him out there for you. And appreciate his contributions to the show. And hope you enjoy the Rock of Norway. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart. A Starkvillian institution, Campus Bookmart, has always been there for you when you've needed them. There's a lot of people that kind of fly by night. There are people that come and go. Not to mention there are all these online companies out there vying for your business that don't know what maroon looks like. The last thing you want, spend your hard-earned cash on some Mississippi State merch and you get a crimson Mississippi State shirt. Stick with the winners. Stick with Campus Bookmart. Go by their Cedar Smiling Faces next time you're in town. Neatly positioned on the backside of campus. Just turn off 182 right there at the Trooper Station. And just mosey on around there on the left right before you get to campus is Campus Bookmart. Go in and see them. If you can't make it to town, we encourage you as always to support a Starkville business. You love Starkville. You want to keep all your institutional places in business. Visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. The latest in Mississippi State merchandise, gift ideas, the diploma frames, always a good idea for the favorite aunt, uncle, or grandparent. Yeah, it's true. It's a timeless gift. They'll look at that diploma on the wall and remember that you're the one that gave them that frame. Super cool, right? Right, it's true. All my books are there as well. We'll do some appearances there later in baseball season. But I encourage you, as always, buy yourself something, not just buy something for everybody else. When I get out there and do some online shopping, I always take care of number one, too. And you should, too. There's a lot of joy in giving, but there's also a lot of joy in having new merchandise. Everything you need for the Bulldog family is available to you at Campus Bookmart. Now, by being a loyal listener to this show, we'll give you a phrase that pays. It's promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right. As you guys know, we lost to Missouri. I think that was somewhat expected. We played a much better game this go around. But one of the things that I would say is Missouri is just better than us. And that may be a difficult thing for some people to take, but they're just better than us. They beat us in two different ways. We made them earn it. Of course, we were absolutely, absolutely embarrassed in Starkville when we played them. But we learned from it. We changed the way we did things and made this a real ball game. Guys, it was tied. You know, right there, 10:35, and State takes a late lead. And we, you know, we kind of nurse this thing along, and all of a sudden you start thinking, okay, we're over the hump. But then Tamar Bates counters with a three. And he has really given us some problems. Probably one of the more unheralded players in the Southeastern Conference. But all of a sudden, you look up right at 7 minutes to play, and the game is tied at 60. And it's Bates again, you know. Takes it back up. State ties it at the six-minute mark with a Josh Hubbard jumper. And you're thinking, okay, this is going to boil down to a final possession. Turns out that it didn't. Down the stretch, we really struggled to kind of match him offensively. We did have a 64-64 all game right at the five-minute mark, and then Cruz finally gets loose and hits the three. And you remember, he sits there and woofs. Like, and I tweeted this out. I love it when karma gives you an immediate return on the investment. Cruz makes the three, runs his head, and then Hubbard goes down, makes it in his face, and gets the foul and converts the four-point play. So State with a one-point advantage at 4:52 to go. And it just really felt from there we had way too many empty possessions. We truly did. You know, Melendez makes one of two free throws to tie it right around the four-minute mark. And I've said this so many times, and when you say it, sometimes people agree with it unless – you know, it kind of challenges their narrative a little bit. Guys, the final 4 minutes of games, more times than not, boils down to coaching. It's not just execution, even though execution is always number one. Players win and lose games, but coaching is a big part of closing out games like this. And I don't know if we just didn't push the right buttons or not. We certainly didn't make enough shots. But, you know, again, you look up there at the four-minute mark and just before the four-minute mark, and it is a 69-69 game. Ultimately, from there, it was pretty much all Missouri. We score two baskets the rest of the way. Is that right? Yeah, two baskets the rest of the way in the final 4 minutes. When you only score 4 points, you're a point a minute down the stretch, it's not going to be good. And we lose the game 85-73. So, again, we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but just wanted to highlight a few performances in the ballgame. I think RJ Melendez, while not the most prolific three-point shooter, is one of State's best players because he does so much for us. Hubbard took a while to get going, but in the second half we found a way to get him some looks. 24 points in the game. 3 of 14 from beyond the arc was not a great night shooting from the perimeter. State goes 6 of 30 in the game, and that is usually a recipe for losing. However, we did a really good job with perimeter defense in this game. They're 8 of 24. They pretty much scored at will the first time we played them. So, again, we've learned some things, done some cool things to make the game more competitive. But at the end of the day, sometimes you just have to admit that people are better than you, and I think Missouri's better than us. I wouldn't have thought that earlier in the year, but it's true. Melendez, with a dozen points and 20 minutes of actions, also fouls out of the game. Cam Matthews, 37 minutes, 4 points. But, man, you look at the stat line, and again, it kind of reverts back to early on in his career. He does so many other things that don't show up in his personal stat line. I felt that was the case. He had a couple of big rebounds. We probably needed a better effort out of him in that respect, full down 5 rebounds. But, again, always a really tough defensive effort from Cam. Riley Kugel kind of disappears on us again, and you kind of got the indication early on that he just wasn't feeling it. He goes 0 of 7 from the field, forced a couple shots too, and missed some shots that, you know, in the paint that probably shouldn't be missed. But 3 of 3 from the line. But the reality of it is that we got to get more from Riley Kugel to make a run in this tournament. He dished out 4 assists and had just the 1 turnover. A big block there late, too, that kind of set up a great sequence for Mississippi State. Michael Nwoko played 7 minutes and pitched in just 2 points. And I'm not the guy that's going to degrade our players, but we need more production from him. If he is going to remain in the starting lineup, we're going to have more. Keyshawn Murphy gets shoved around a little bit at times on defense, but he is one of State's best offensive players. Again, 18 points, 8 rebounds. In 29 minutes of action. And Sean Jones, good game for Sean. You know, you don't run a lot of offense through Sean. He's just kind of rather opportunistic when those opportunities come. He does his best to cash in. 10 points for him. And any night that you get 10 points from him, you feel like you've really gotten a bonus shooter. Claudio Harris, no points for him. 0 of 3 from the three-point line. And that was all of his shots. Played just 10 minutes. But, yeah, I mean, it's not like they schemed up Riley Kugel. Claudio Harris and Michael Nwoko, those guys were just kind of, you know, non-participants in the ballgame. You look at fast break points, State had 6 in the game, and I thought this was really the difference between us and them. They did a great job kind of getting out in transition. We struggled at times to defend transition. They had 19 points on the break. And this is how it is. It was a good game up until the final 4 minutes, and we just simply couldn't close and lose by 12. And remember, right around the 4-minute mark, it's a tie game. And we get absolutely run out of the gym late. Of course, when the teams begin to pull away, you got a foul. They made their free throws, and that ended up being the difference down the stretch. We didn't make them. They did. And I don't know that we got to the line enough, but 19 of 27 for State and then 23 of 28 for them. So a lot of factors kind of go into this thing. And so now – you know, we're kind of waiting for this tournament to end. You know, we get into Selection Sunday tomorrow as you guys are, we know where there's no anxiety about us being in. It's kind of like, where are we going to go? And I don't know how much more we could have gained, even if we won this tournament. As great as it is, maybe you move up 1 seed line, perhaps 2, if enough traffic kind of clears around you. But I think the tournament went as expected. We needed to get 1, hope to get 2. But the reality of it is, I think it pretty much went to script when it's all said and done. And so looking back at Friday's action, Auburn beats a very stubborn Ole Miss team who's playing well. Auburn wins by 5. Tennessee takes care of Texas, and now they're projected to be one of the last 4 out. And Texas not really happy about that. But you know, we'll see how things play out. Greg Sankey seems to be very confident we'll get all 14 teams in, so we'll see. Florida gets after Missouri pretty good, 95-81, and an Alabama 29-point victory over Kentucky. This Alabama team is maybe a bit of a surprise. I mean, I know some people expected them to do well, but it has not been the quintessential Nate Oakes offense. And with all they lost last year, you thought, well, you know, maybe take a step back. It's been a really good year. Semifinals today, Tennessee and Auburn. That game, last I looked, was like a 2-point game. Tennessee giving Auburn all they want. And then Alabama and Florida will play later this afternoon. Winners advance to the finals. So, you know, everybody's watching bracketology. As it stands right now, Joe Lenardi, who is kind of the definitive expert when it comes to bracketology, has State as the 9 seed taking on UConn. I'd love to be able to get one of these games where it's not, you know, a perennial blue blood in college basketball. But I do think it's a game we're capable of winning if we play up to our potential. And then the reward for that would be playing Duke in the second round. We always talk about these tournaments are all about matchups. I don't know how good these matchups are for us. But if we can find a way to get through UConn, if this bracket holds, and we don't know for sure that it will. You know, again, there's really only a day and a half left. But there's a good chance, you know, going to Raleigh, North Carolina maybe wouldn't be the worst thing. A lot of our fans, I think, would be able to make the trip there. But, you know, Duke's been a little beat up. You know, maybe you've kind of kept up there. You know, Malik Brown left the game earlier this week with a dislocated shoulder. That has been a chronic problem for him. But Cooper Flagg, severely sprained ankle. You got to wonder, you know, even with the advancements in medical technology, how good he can be in the tournament. Did not play in the ACC semifinal. They say he'll be good to go next week, as you'd expect that, but appeared to be a fairly significant injury. No breaks, it appears, but this Duke team, though they would be a number one, appear to be a team that may be a little bit vulnerable. And I'm not going to sit here and I say I expect State to get to the Sweet 16, but I do believe that that bracket, that pod, may not be maybe as difficult as it looked on paper, if that makes sense. You know, I think that's an aspect of it. Again, it's about being healthy. UConn loses yesterday in the Big East tournament to Creighton by 9. The Huskies 23-11 this year. And we'll see how things go. You know, I mean, they're kind of a contemporary in that respect when you look at it this year. But, you know, UConn is UConn, right? That's the, you know, kind of the way it breaks out. And if, again, if that holds, and there's no guarantee it does, 23-10 this year, 14-6. They have been a team that's been very good at home, as you'd expect, 14-2. And but on neutral floor, it's just 2-4. You know, we'll see how things progress in that respect. But, yeah, so, you know, obviously, kind of a helmet sticker quality opponent for us. You know, you get a chance to get a dub there, and you know, we'll see how things kind of, you know, progress. But yeah, the reality of it is that we expected to make the tournament. We are expected to make the tournament, and could be an incredible year for the SEC to get to set a new record. You know, we'll see how that goes. And again, kind of looking at the latest projections, Oklahoma, Arkansas, according to Lenardi, the last four byes. Vandy among the last four in, and then Texas and North Carolina and Indiana, some big names there, included in the first four out. And then beyond that, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and you know, some mid-majors. But Vanderbilt currently listed as the play-in game against San Diego State. I believe those games are still played in Dayton. But, yeah, I mean, you look around there, you know, Auburn, of course, projected as a one, could be the number one overall seed. Probably need to win the tournament to ensure, the league tournament to be sure about that. Missouri currently listed as a seven. And I think they have a great bracket, to be honest with you. I think Missouri is a team that's capable of making a really good run if this is what holds. You know, Missouri against West Virginia, and then you get, you know, St. John's and Omaha. I think the Missouri team's really good. So Sweet 16, and then beyond that, it, you know, you would pair up against probably Texas Tech, you know. So we'll see. But, you know, certainly a lot of basketball left to be played. But by the time they get to Saturday, and I've had people tell me this with knowledge of this process, it's pretty much the results of Sunday really don't matter as much. It's pretty much the hay is in the barn by Saturday, even though it's not announced, unless there is like a, you know, a lower seed or a higher seed, pardon me, that makes a run that could change some things up. So then they have like a A bracket and a B bracket. So there's, again, there's not a lot. And we've seen that happen with us before, that we end up, you know, we're projected in one direction and we end up winning the SEC tournament and you don't get a lot of benefit from it in your seeding, or it doesn't appear to be. Because, you know, those games go final, and then next thing you know, we're making the announcements, you know. So there is some advanced work done there. And as Lenardi sees it right now, 13 teams in and Texas the 14th team out. 14 of 16, kind of an incredible situation. And some people out there are trying to argue that the SEC is overrated. I think when you look at the non-conference record, some would disagree, but you know, we're getting a chance to go prove it. We'll see how things progress with that aspect of it. But that's where the men sit. When we get back together on Monday, we'll know exactly who we're playing, when we're playing, and where we're playing. But isn't it nice to be here on the final weekend of the regular season, knowing and having a lot of confidence that your team is in and that we're not having to kind of nail bite this thing out? There have been some times, I remember during the Stansberry era, that we felt like we should have been in and went into Selection Sunday kind of hoping we would get in. So we're not really having to kind of worry with that at this point. That's the latest feeling. But it's so interesting, too. Like, I read these comments about, oh, so many people are upset about Lunardi and his projections. You know, the guy basically never claims to be a basketball guy per se. Like, I don't think Joe Lunardi would ever go out there and coach a team. But he is a guy that's a bit of a nerd, right? He's a data nerd. He's built the name on this. And even though things change regularly based on the previous day's results, he is recognized as the industry's best expert. Jerry Palm does a good job with us at CBS. But I see people that are like, well, I'm upset with Lunardi's projections. Well, why are you? I mean, the reality of it is he's just kind of following the rules of the selection committee process and offering his opinion. You're welcome to disagree. But your opinions of his projections are not going to be rooted in the same type of data. And I think that's important to understand. So for those teams out there that are upset, well, I mean, you know, you can get glad in the same pair of pants you got mad in. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I encourage you, if you're bringing a large group of people to town, stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be glad you did. You'll have an opportunity, of course, to use all the amenities available to you, that full-service kitchen. How cool is it? You can just, you know, you can prepare your food there, you know, and sometimes that's half the fun, right, is everybody getting together and kind of cooking and preparing a meal, and the anticipation of that meal finally being ready sometimes is worth the meal itself. And then, of course, you've got that great wet bar. You've got the back porch area. You've got the fire pit area, six bedrooms, soon to be three baths, currently two. But it's the old renovated clubhouse out at the old country club just out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So conveniently located, you can even do your tailgating there. Instead of having to drag everything to campus, just do it there, bounce over there, watch the ball game, come back, and sit around, watch some more basketball, baseball, or football, whatever your sport of choice is, and what time of year you choose to frequent the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And you, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page comes up so you can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. Very easy to find, but it's off the beaten path just a little bit. You know, well off the road. So a lot of peace and quiet out there. But once you Google that, you're also going to have some booking options. Now, you can go through Airbnb or VRBO. I don't know. You may have a credit with them for all I know. Maybe you just want to do business with them. That's up to you. But if you want to save some money, you can book through the Evolve website, and we can save you a little money. Promo code BSR10, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson, and then the number 10, BSR10, to get 10% off your stay. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, looking over at the women's side of things, as it stands today, and Charlie Cream, I've met Charlie, and I've asked him before, I said, man, how do you always get so close? He goes, well, it's really not that difficult. I mean, once you put in all the automatic qualifiers, you just kind of follow the rules, you know, and follow the net, and it's pretty easy. Yeah, well, he's become the definitive expert, much like his counterpart, Joe Lunardi. So as it stands today, Mississippi State, one of 10 SEC teams projected to make the big dance. Big 10 leads the way with 12, right? So second is the SEC. Still a good chance the SEC wins this thing. Some great teams in the SEC. What's interesting, too, of the last four byes, the last four in, none of those are SEC teams. So what that tells me is those that are in are safely in. There aren't even any conference teams in the first four out or the next four out. There are no Mississippi or SEC teams in the play-in games. And so that tells me, you know, based on the numbers, that the SEC expects to be well-respected and that Charlie Cream sees the SEC of the tournament teams there in safely. South Carolina, Region 1, number one. Projected as the number one overall seed. Alabama is a 5. Vanderbilt, a 7 in Fort Worth. Texas, the 1 seed in Birmingham. How about that? And if South Carolina and Texas, Birmingham's not playing, but if South Carolina and Texas both advance, they would meet in the Final Four, first game of the Final Four. Looking a little bit deeper into this, Kentucky, a 3 seed. Again, a really good year for Kentucky. Region 2 will be of interest. Tennessee, a 5 seed. LSU, a 3. LSU, you know, had some injuries down the stretch. We'll see what they look like. And, you know, so there'll be some interesting games in that region, but we're not one of them. But Region 3 is, you know, Spokane. That's where that's where it's all said and done. But wouldn't it be interesting to play Ole Miss again? It's possible. Well, it's currently set for State to go to L.A. USC is a 1 seed, is expected to play Tennessee Tech, a 1 versus 16 game, and then Cal versus Mississippi State in an 8 versus 9 game. That's what Charlie currently projects. In the quadrant beneath ours, who we would play should we advance to the Sweet 16, there's Ole Miss. Kansas State, the 5, Missouri State, the 12, Ole Miss, the 4, South Florida, the 13. So we certainly expect Ole Miss to win game 1. They could beat Kansas State, and if State could somehow manage to get out of there, you could have a matchup in the Sweet 16. Between in-state rivals. So that's interesting. So again, we're not sweating this thing out. You know, again, I think the worst case scenario that we thought maybe after a tournament is maybe we would fall to the play-in game, but that, again, not projected to be the case. So Selection Sunday should be a good day for Mississippi State fans. Selection Monday should be as well. I know many of you will make the trip. It kind of works out good, too, with State baseball being on the road next weekend, right? So it makes the decision-making process a lot easier for some of you. I will be in Norman covering baseball. And, you know, provided that I live long enough to get there, it will complete my bingo card of covering Mississippi State sports on all 16 SEC campuses. And that's something that I'm really proud of. And it's something that I think my kids will be too. That I'm not, if not the first, I may be the first, but I'm certainly among the first to be able to make that claim, and certainly the first Mississippi State rider to make that claim. So excited to get out there and do that. I would be remiss if we did not mention kind of what's going on with softball. Now 23-5, and you know we swept Auburn early in the year, and you know of course this league is so incredibly brutal. You know, and I thought Schlossnagel said it best: every weekend's a super regional in the SEC in baseball, and that certainly is the case more times than not in softball as well. But you know, the ladies play a doubleheader against Alabama yesterday. We split that, but State wins game 1 9-1 in 6 innings, and then lose 7-4. In game 2. So the rubber game tomorrow, again, no sporting events today for Mississippi State. That's a 1:30 start. And again, anytime that you can get a road series in this league, it's absolutely huge. And so really pulling for Coach Ricketts and the whole group over there, to say the least. If you haven't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. You can get signed copies of all of my sports titles as well as my memoir about you know, getting sober and what it's taken to stay sober. When the bottom falls, you can order all those from the same website link, dutynoblebook.com. Everything is there. That's Flim Flam, Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, and every Bulldog needs a copy of Dog Pile. When the bottom falls, and of course, The Dude. And it's been nominated for some awards. That's super cool, too. Hopefully, maybe we'll win something. Wouldn't that be cool? And come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starville. Kind of a clear schedule today. And we've had some people like that were scheduled for today that rescheduled for tomorrow or another day. But we've had, you know, again, some vacancies today and had some people, as the weather has improved, decide, hey, I think I'm going to go float. And I can't wait to go float, too. I may go float tonight. We'll just kind of see how things go. But yeah, I enjoy floating because it does so. I'm getting older, so I have a lot more aches and pains and a lot more stressors in my life. You would think the older you get, the less you have, but we're always going to have challenges. There's always going to be a new hill to climb. you know. And of course, going to open another business is always part of that. You know, I mean, if I want to, I can really get myself in a state of worry fairly quickly. But I like going to float because of the fact it allows my mind to rest. So if you're a person that just needs a break, or maybe you struggle with chronic pain or anxiety, we may be able to help you. We've helped many others. And so we encourage you to come out and float. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana, who is a registered nurse, and she can answer any questions you have about floating. Before we get out of here, a few things I wanted to say, and save this for the end. One of the things that about life that I share with my kids, and I've said on this show before, and I've written several times, it is easier not to be great. And what's interesting about that is there are so many people that are satisfied not being great. And I'm just not one of those people, right? There have been times in my life maybe I've settled for less. And I share that with you because my hope is that we will not just have a better than them mentality. And that's not just in life, but I equate a lot of that to Mississippi State sports too. I work in an industry, and let me go ahead and preface this by saying I am not shooting any darts at anybody on the Mississippi State beat. That's not what I'm going to say some things that are rather pointed, but they're not directed at them. But you know, I deal a lot with you know, people that work in media relations around the country. You know, sometimes we need information, we need images. As I'm working through the dude, you know, having to reach out to a lot of people to get records. And the reality of it is where these people are being asked to do more than ever. It's true. But I had a conversation with somebody earlier, you know, this month, and we talked a little bit about that, you know. And here's what I'll say about that. Yes, we're asking more, and they're probably being paid less. But here's what I would say is you still accepted the job. You accepted the job. And my firm belief, when you agree to go work for somebody, you should give them their absolute best. And if you do, you will be recognized and rewarded, maybe not by that employer, maybe by the next employer. But if you agree to take a job, no matter the circumstances, you need to bring your best effort. And one of the things, in the age of being offended, one of the things that is offensive to me is people that don't do their best. Now, I'm not always reliant on those people, but sometimes I am. And, you know, you're working through here and say, hey, listen, you send an email, you make a phone call, and it's like, hey, I need this image or I need this, and just let me know when you can get it for me. I understand you're busy, but, you know, and then sometimes it never happens. Or some people make a commitment to you. And that's not just germane to my industry. You know, when I go out places, and you know, anybody can manage an operation when things are going well, right? And no matter how well-intended you are, at some point, something is going to happen beyond your control that is going to negatively impact your customers or your customer experience. It's true. And rather than pass the buck, you got to go out there and smile and say, hey, I'm terribly sorry, but here's where we are. And you got to fix it. You have to fix it, right, as best you can. I don't care if you work at McDonald's and, you know, the truck is late, right? That's not your fault, but you're the person, you're the face of that company, and you've got to go out there and, you know, do your best to explain the situation and ensure that your customer's not impeded. It's true. If you work at a restaurant, all of a sudden, you know, you might get a bag shipment of fish. And they're like, oh, we got to 86 this and take it out the menu for a while. And somebody shows up, oh, I came here to get the Chilean sea bass. I'm sorry, we're out of it. And you say, hey, you know, your expectations of us are very high. We plan to meet those. But we don't believe that we could deliver the meal that you normally get from us. So we just decided we're going to go in a different direction right now. But next time you come back, we'll take care of it. Maybe you toss in a free dessert and let them leave with a smile on their face. It's true. But there are so many people, and I have impressed this upon my children their entire lives. There are so many people out there, and I'm actually grateful for them in some respects. right? Especially the ones that, you know, kind of work in my industry. There are some people that are just going to do the bare minimum. And maybe they'll reach a comfortable standard of living, or at least a contentment, right? Where they, I can buy a house, I can pay the bills, you know, I'm going to be able to eat, kids are going to get a warm meal every night. And you know what? If that's what you want in life, then congratulations. I want a little bit more. And it is so incredibly difficult for me, and maybe it's because I expect too much from other people. But there are sometimes there are people that we rely on, and again, this is not about Mississippi State. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. But I share that with you, and I just want to reinforce the point. I don't want anybody involved with Mississippi State at any level, whether it be an administrator, you know, associate AD, a coach, an assistant coach, a trainer. I don't want anybody involved with Mississippi State that is not prepared to give their very best, period. And part of that equation is because of the fact I deal with so many other people in college athletics that just do a poor job. And I don't want anybody else to have that opinion of Mississippi State, right? I think there is a standard that we have to set and meet all the time. And this is not necessarily about wins and losses, you know, or hosting or traveling or being an 8-9 seed in a tournament or making a bowl game. All of those things matter. And there's all this discussion about whether the little things matter. And so many people that tell me that the little things only matter that other people have to do, not what they have to do, or not what they're willing to do, not what they are a part of. You know, there's a standard that we hold other people to, for many people, that doesn't apply to themselves. No one could ever hold me to a higher standard than I do. I can assure you, all I ever do is work. And I sat down last couple nights after you all had gone to sleep, and I watched you know, the Netflix series, Zero Day, and it's excellent. It is. And I thought, man, I don't get to do this enough. And then I thought, you know what? I could have written another article. I mean, I could have spread this thing out over a few days rather than 2 days. But, you know, sometimes you simply need a minute. But I believe, and not just in sports or anything like that, there has to be a standard of excellence. And a lot of people can't truly define excellence, right? And I think about this stuff like with fast food. Like if I said, okay, who has the best service, customer service, immediately you're going to say Chick-fil-A because they pride themselves on giving exemplary service, right? They do. They take so much pride in that. And you know why? Because word of mouth is the best advertising. When you go to Chick-fil-A, I mean, it's almost like it's expected now that the level of service is going to exceed everything else. And the fact that we're having this conversation is really a testament to the way that they do business. The flip side of that is if I ask you, I'm not going to name names because, you know, we have some, you know, local people that own some of these establishments and they're doing the best they can. But there is a national reputation at times around, you know, some national fast food retailers that is not very good. And if I ask you, say, hey, who gives the worst service? And immediately you shoot out a couple names, right? And the thing that I think about that aspect of it, is every bit of that is managerial. It's all managerial, right? Managers that don't care have employees that don't care. And for me, when I think about, you know, I own the business, I could sit back and be a CEO and just kind of point and say, hey, you do this and you do that. We probably would be okay. I just don't know if we'd be great. And that's not narcissism. I just think that the best organizations have a owner-operator, not just an owner, right? You have to have people that are out here willing to hold themselves to the highest standard within the organization. You know, we've had problems in our organization over the years. You know, my goodness, when I thought about this last night. If I lived for two more years, I would have been writing about Mississippi State for 30 years. And I look back sometimes and I think, where did all the days go? Well, they all went to Davis Wade Stadium and Duty Noble Field and Humphrey Coliseum and parts unknown, you know, around the country, you know, covering Mississippi State. And I wouldn't trade any of those days for anything. And that's one of the things that I preach to people all the time, even within my organization and others. You know, you can always go sell insurance, and that's not a shot at people that sell insurance. I mean, my insurance agents are fantastic, right? And times like these, you really need those people in your lives, you know, when there's, you know, loss of property or things of that nature. But we are so fortunate to be in the position that we're in. And I remind our guys all the time at jeanspage.com that we are among the luckiest people and the most fortunate people in the world. And in order to stay in this position, you've got to work hard to stay there. Because a lot of people out there that would trade with you in a second. You know, I give David Brandt a lot of credit, man. And love Dave. Got a chance to see him. We went out to Arizona and at Arizona State. And Dave used to be here. And he was kind of like, we used to talk about, he was like the fraternity legacy that would come back every now and again. And we were talking about how contentious, you know, things were at the time between the State and Ole Miss media beat. And of course, I was in the center of all of that. And, you know, I got things to say. I'm going to say them, and I really don't care if it hurts people's feelings. And that's not, you know, I'm a firm believer, and I can't remember who to attribute the quote to, but it says, if the truth will kill them, then let them die. Yeah, that's a little bit over the top, but that's kind of how I feel. And I think there's so many people sometimes that are allergic to the truth. But that being said, Dave Brandt said, you know, what are we all so angry about? We get to cover college sports for a living. And that always stays with me. Like when I get all stressed and get caught up in stuff, I think, man, you know, oh my gosh. I remember when I used to work retail hours and, you know, I had to deal with delivery problems and all this kind of stuff like that. And I think, man, this is so much better. And there's so much of it that's in my control. But it's so incredibly amazing to me when I see people in our industry that get to work at their own pace, that don't take the same level of pride in what they do that they would if they had somebody directly looking over their shoulder, not necessarily micromanaging things, but just kind of managing things. Left to their own devices, mediocre people become very mediocre, and they never have any aspirations to be excellent. And I think part of the problem with every bit of that is they get reinforced because mediocre people flock together. It's true. They do. And I believe, based on my own personal observations in the length of my career, is one of the reasons they do is they want affirmation from other people that they're doing a good job when they're not doing a good job. Excellence repels mediocre people. And one of the reasons why is because mediocre people and mediocre employees are not willing to do what excellent people are. And I hope that you will be an excellent person, professionally, personally. Guys, I am far from perfect. I make a lot of mistakes. But I understand how the world works in that respect. And I'm a firm believer that, hey, you work hard and you do your part and you hope God will bless your labor. It's true. But it's so interesting. There's a lot of people out there that we talk about, you know, hey, this is on a wing and a prayer. Oh, it's mostly a prayer. It truly is. You got some people out there that'll, you know, they'll put forth the minimal effort and just say, oh, you know, I don't understand why things aren't working out. I can tell you why things aren't working out. It's because you are not working out. It's as simple as that. And so I've been very blessed and very fortunate to have you as an audience and to have so many of you that have been part of our Jeans Page family for so many years. Ran into Ronnie just yesterday, and he's been with us for 17 years. You know, it's just amazing to me. You know, we take a lot of pride in what we do, and we take a lot of pride in being your eyes and ears. And there is a reason that we do the things that we do. It's just like somebody told me the other day, is, you know, I'm making the trip back from Houston. And they goes, man, are you really going to drive all the way back tonight? And I said, well, yeah, I got to do a Monday show. Ah, well, people will understand. Yeah, well, yes, sometimes they do. But I ask a lot of these people already to understand. The reason that I'm making the drive and getting home at 3 in the morning and then recording the show is because that's what the job requires. And I think that's probably the parting shot today, probably the most important thing that we need to understand as people, whether we be in athletics or in media or in retail or whatever we're involved in, is at times, you know, people say, well, I'm doing my best, when they're not doing their best. And the reality of it is sometimes the job requires more than your current best. And so rather than do your best, let's do what the job requires. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people are going to find out that you're just not good enough. But you can get better. You can. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.